Welcome to Common Sense Care, parenting your gender-confused child with truth and love. So-called affirmative care is the gender industry's one-size-fits-all answer for any and all children struggling with their identity. In no other area of education, medicine, or psychology is one treatment plan assigned to every person. At Partners for Ethical Care, we believe that each child is an individual and should be treated that way and given the care and support that's most appropriate for him or her. Today, we're talking about finding trustworthy support for your child, and I'm Maria Keffler.
And I'm Erin Brewer, and boy, is this a difficult topic, Maria. I wanted to just let people know that how I got involved in this in the first place was as a result of a conversion therapy ban that was introduced in the state that I live in. And when I read through the text of the ban, I realized that they were trying to ban the very care that helped me resolve my gender identity issues when I was a child. And my state's not alone. There are many, many states who have passed these kind of bans. So therapists are actually not allowed to help a child explore the underlying causes of their gender identity issues. So that makes finding appropriate care for your child just that much harder. But it doesn't mean it's not out there. You can find it.
Yeah. Traditionally, when you go to a therapist or you take your child to a therapist, the first thing the therapist will do is get to know the whole person and investigate, do you have any other medical issues? Do you have any other diagnoses that you've already gotten from other doctors or therapists? Have you had trauma in your life? You know, what's going on in your life right now? You know, if for a child, have you had a significant loss? Did your parents divorce? Has someone close to you died? They'll investigate all those things. Are you on any medications? Are there any possibly comorbid disorders? Comorbid meaning occurring at the same time. Like we know with autism, kids who are on the autism spectrum often have comorbid disorders of ADHD, of obsessive compulsive disorder. And so those are things that kind of often tend to come together. And so when you go to a therapist, almost without fail, that is what a therapist will do, is try to look at all of the underlying causes or possibilities for why you might be suffering with what you're suffering. But as you pointed out, Erin, these conversion therapy bans, they are telling therapists, when a child comes to you and says that they question their gender identity or they think they're a different gender than they are, you are not allowed to investigate any of those other things. Those therapists are not allowed to do anything except say, yes, you are right, you are the wrong sex, and we need to treat you that way. And that's incredibly problematic.
And the other thing is, it's not just in states that have these legislative bans, that a lot of people who are coming out of schools who are new to therapy have really embraced this affirmative care model, even though it's completely, it's not research-based, there's no evidence behind it, but it's an ideology and they've embraced it. And so even in states where there aren't these bans, it might be hard to find someone who doesn't ascribe to this affirmative care model. And so you kind of have to be a little bit more investigative than you otherwise would have if this were another issue. Because in other issues, they like you said, they will do a comprehensive assessment and they will look for, you know, contributing factors, underlying issues, family dynamics. They will look at all of these, but they don't do that with gender identity issues, which is so frustrating. The other concern that I've seen is that parents will take their child to a therapist and the therapist will affirm them, but will not communicate with the parent. And so one of the recommendations I make is first vet the therapist, find out what their ideology is, find out if they're going to affirm your child. And if they are, find a different therapist. And the other thing is to do family counseling so that you're in the room with the child. And some people might argue that this isn't going to allow the child to fully express themselves, but this will give you a chance to sort of assess the therapist and determine whether or not you feel comfortable with leaving your child alone with the therapist. Because again, in many states, there are laws that protect the child therapist relationship, and you may not be able to get access to files about your child once you turn them over to a therapist.
That's a very good point. And I think we're going to put some resources underneath the video to help you figure out how do I find a therapist who's going to be the best fit for our family and who's going to partner with us with the same desired therapy, desired for the whole child, to look at the whole child. So definitely look at those resources as well. I spoke with one parent, and I thought this was painfully telling about what's going on, at least in the schools with school counselors. This parent's child had been well known with the counselor in the elementary school. The child had an IEP mm-hmm. and spent a lot of time with the counselor, and the parent knew the counselor quite well. And the parent said, I've sat in the counselor's office and said, I need a counselor today, help me out. And she said the counselor was always great about listening, asking questions, kind of, well, let's look at where this could be coming from. Why are you feeling this way? Whatnot. Well, when the child hit middle school and announced a transgender identity out of the blue, the parent said, she thought, you know what, that elementary school counselor really knows my child well. I'm going to talk to her. She called the counselor, and the first thing the counselor said was, you have to affirm that identity. That's the best price. You need to affirm it. No question of when did this happen? Did we see this at all in elementary school? What could be going on? Not a single question. And that is shocking, but it's really telling about what is being pressed upon counselors and therapists that they have to do in this situation. And by the way, that child who the elementary school counselor said had to be affirmed has now desisted.
Oh.
That child's family did not affirm and you know, applied some of the techniques we've talked about in other videos. And that child has now said, you know what, I am my birth sex.
Oh, what a good outcome. And that's so encouraging to know that even if you have so-called experts telling you you should do it one way, that as a parent, you know, your child wasn't born in the wrong body. You know the history of the child. You know that that child did not have, you know, a long-term history of gender dysphoria, that this is, you know, not something that is going to be healthy for your child. And so I just applaud that parent for holding firm with the belief that they're gonna do whatever it takes in order to not affirm the child and to help that child resolve those gender identity issues, which can be really hard because as you mentioned, this is a school counselor. This idea that you have to affirm a child has just taken off like wildfire. Mm-hmm. It's not evidence-based. There's no research behind it. It's just an ideology. It's a belief system, and it's a very harmful belief system that's been pushed on people. And that might sound kind of hyperbolic, but I think if we can watch this video, it talks about how we might refer to it as peer pressure when it's related to children, but it's actually a sort of societal pressure that people can actually, they will actually agree to something that's completely false. And they know it when they feel that there's enough pressure on them. And I believe that's what's happening right now to a lot of mental health experts, is that there's just so much pressure that either A, they won't deal with these kids at all, or B, they're just going to go along with it because everybody else is going along with it. And if they don't, they might get shamed, they might get fired, they might get called a hater. And so there is just this tremendous pressure. And I know that there are a lot of therapists who are actually, they're letting their therapeutic license kind of expire, and they're becoming life coaches, which is a non-licensed kind of helper, mental health helper. And that might be a route that parents need to go if they live in states that have these therapy bans, or if they're unable to find a therapist who has a different model besides affirmative care.
Yeah. Well, we see that happening in schools as well, as more and more of these policies are put into place and teachers and staff are required. They're not even allowed to just sort of skirt the issue. They're being required to teach gender ideology, to use enforced pronouns, to do things that they really feel are not ethical. Teachers are taking early retirement, or they're leaving the school system in order to pursue some other employment because they can no longer practice their careers with their consciences intact. And that's heartbreaking.
Yeah, and so that's what happens when there's this tremendous social pressure. In this video, it's about social conformity. It shows that even without these kinds of tremendous pressure, people sometimes will doubt their own perceptions. And so even just if other people are perceiving or saying they perceive things differently, sometimes that's enough for someone to doubt their own selves. In this case, it comes with this huge amount of pressure and potential for, you know, life impacts like losing your job. So it's not surprising that it's hard to find mental health providers who are willing to use a different model. So let's look at this video.
It describes how we adjust our behavior or thinking to follow the behavior or rules of the group we belong to. Social psychologists have always been curious about the degree to which a person might follow or rebel against their group's social norms. During the early 1950s, Polish-American psychologist Solomon Asch expressed the power of conformity through a simple test. In this experiment, a volunteer is told that they're participating in a study on visual perception and is seated at a table with five other people. The experimenter shows the group a picture of a standard line and three comparison lines of various lengths, and then ask the people to say which of the three lines matches the comparison line. It's clear to anyone with any kind of good vision that the second line is the right answer. But the thing is, most, if not all, of the other people in the group start choosing the wrong line. The participant doesn't know that those other people are all actors, a common deception used in social psychological research, and they're intentionally giving the wrong answer. This causes the real participant to struggle with trusting their own eyes or going with the group. In the end, most subjects still gave what they knew was the correct answer, but more than a third were essentially just willing to give the wrong answer to mesh with the group. Asch and subsequent researchers found that people are more likely to conform to a group if they're made to feel incompetent or insecure, and are in a group of three or more people, especially if all those people agree. It also certainly doesn't hurt if the person admires the group because of maybe their status or their attractiveness, and if they feel that others are watching their behavior.
So this research is really powerful that shows how easily influenced people are to doubt their own perceptions. So it's not surprising that with the tremendous pressure, the resources, the money that's going into the transgender movement, that we have therapists who are kind of caving in to this ideology. At the same time, as parents, we know that it's not going to be good for our children to go down this route. So if we can't find a therapist, you know, I think that there's sort of this kind of knee-jerk reaction these days that if your kid isn't happy, take him to a therapist. And that may not necessarily be the appropriate thing. I know that Sasha Ayad, who's worked with a lot of kids with gender identity issues, has actually said that we tend to over-therapize our kids. I'm not even sure if that's a word, but that you know, we tend to just automatically think, oh, let's take him to a therapist, that'll fix him. And in this case, that may not be the best approach. There are some other techniques. So what kinds of things have you heard that have been effective?
Really, the thing that I am hearing from parents who have gotten their kids back from this has been a pretty radical detaching of the child from influences that are pushing the child toward the transgender ideology. And as we're seeing, it is in all aspects of society. It's in the school. Child walks down the hall and there's posters on the wall asking, what gender are you? And they go to English class and the counselor comes in and gives a gender presentation, and they go to science and the teacher tells them, oh, transgender ideology is very scientific, which is not true. And so some people have had to pull their kids from school to sever the influences there. Going back to counselors at school, the American School Counselor Association, which is the largest professional association for school counselors, has guidance out about counselors dealing with transgender identified kids. And it says right in there, that they should hide this from parents if the child wants it hidden. So that is an act of deception.
That reminds me of an audio that was just released of a grandmother who contacted a school counselor at her granddaughter's school. Her granddaughter had just barely turned 11. So was, you know, like within a month had turned 11. So was very young, had also lost her father recently. So her father died. And apparently this child was going into the school therapist's office and the therapist was affirming her transgender identity. And the grandmother was just mortified, almost speechless at times. And I'll actually post a link to this audio tape because it's so powerful when you hear the kind of rationalization that school counselors use. You know, they might say, yeah, I know that a child's brain doesn't fully develop until they're 25. Yes, I know that there might be these underlying issues, but I'm just going to go ahead and do this because I don't want to hurt their feelings, or I want them to feel safe with me. And so there's this whole rationalization around this affirmation model that is just so, it's like in the video that the lines, you know, you might very clearly know that the, you know, which line is the same size as the other line. But if everybody else is telling you it's another line, you're going to be like, well, okay, I'm just going to go ahead.
I should just go along.
And then if you lay upon that, the risk of potentially losing your job or, you know, being shamed or being told that you're a hater, it's not surprising at all that this affirmation model is taking hold. This might sound really frustrating, and it is. It's incredibly frustrating that it might be hard to find good mental health experts for your child. We're actually going to dedicate a whole episode on how to sort of deprogram your child, because really what's happened is your child has been force-fed this ideology, and you need to really deprogram them. Is really, you know, this is a belief system that they've accepted, and it's a harmful belief system. And it sort of reminds me, you know, I use this analogy a lot of a child who's a drug addict. And if a child's a drug addict and they keep hanging out around the same friends, if they keep going to the same places, if they go to a school where drugs are available, it's going to be really hard for them to kick the habit. And so sometimes this is a lot bigger than just finding a therapist. And sometimes if you live in a state where therapists are prohibited from exploring those underlying issues, you might need to be creative and find something like a life coach instead for your child to talk to, or a trusted relative, or, you know, somebody else who you feel confident is going to help guide them on the right path. We do have some questions. Do you want me to read the first one?
Sure.
Okay. My child is being sucked into a glitter family. Oh, who wants him to come live with them where he won't be challenged on his desire to live as a woman. How do we keep him from moving in with them? Maria, can you address what a glitter family is for people who may not be familiar with that term?
Yeah, glitter family is a group of people who will affirm your child's gender identity. And it's so harmful and so hurtful, because what they will tell the child is, if your family is toxic or unsupportive, or in other words, if your family doesn't agree with letting you do everything you want to do, you can cut off your family and come over and be part of our family. Mm. And with young adults, sometimes it's, you know, a house full or an apartment full of all transgender people who, I like your analogy for drug addicts, you know, it's just a group of them just reinforcing each other and forcing each other further and further down the path of medicalization. But it's really an insidious, I keep coming back to that word, but it's the right word, insidious way of destroying a family, destroying a child's relationship with his family, and giving him this, they call it a glitter family.
Oh gosh. And that just sounds, like the drug analogy, if you've got a kid who isn't ready to give up drugs, and they've got a place where, you know, a drug house, and they're saying, hey, come on over here, we've got the drugs, we won't give you a hard time. It's going to be really hard to prevent your child from going to that glitter family. And in this case, this parent who's asking, you know, what can they do to keep him from moving in? Some of it depends on the age of the child. If the child's an adult, there's probably not a heck of a lot you can do. If the child's an older teen, you might be more limited. If the child's younger, there are a lot of things that you can do. We're going to get into it more in the episode where we talk about deprogramming your child. But you may have to cut off social media. You might have to pull them from the school they're at. You might have to really just sequester them, kind of build walls of protection around them until they have time to work through this deprogramming.
One of the things that I think parents really need to be aware of that's happening around them is the child is not simply being affirmed, but there's this sense of sort of a savior complex, was how Sasha Ayad put it. These people, these teachers, these counselors, neighbors, extended family, they've got this idea that they're going to be the one that is the safe place for this child. They're going to be the one that saves the poor transgender kid from his toxic parents. And there's this unhealthy sense of, I'm going to be the one who saves you, that helps them rationalize really awful undermining of parental love, parental responsibility, parental authority. Many are quite happy. They have a real sense of pride in going behind your back to affirm your child in something that's very unhealthy. And one very simple way to find out, you know, what people are saying or what people's impression about this is to just really bring up the topic sort of casually. Like, oh, you know, there's a child in my child's school who just came out as transgender. Drop that into the conversation and see what's said.
That's a really good idea.
If the person is sort of hesitant, like, oh, really? Wow, huh. That might indicate that they're a little bit more gender critical, but are afraid to bring it up. But if you hear, oh, that's so wonderful. Oh, it's so great that kids
authentic
are-
Authentic selves.
Yeah, authentic selves. You start hearing that language, you know very well that's not a person who's safe for you or your children.
Yeah, and it is okay as a parent to just say you don't get to have contact with that person anymore. And actually in the audio tape of the grandma, that's what she did. She told the school counselor, you will not have contact with my granddaughter anymore, period. And yeah. You get to do that as a parent. You get to decide if somebody they may appear to be in a position where, you know, they're in a helping position, school counselors, you think, of course, they're safe. But I've heard story after story after story of parents being undermined by school counselors. So you really have to be careful of that. And it's okay to say, my child will not see you anymore.
Yeah. And when did we stop respecting parental authority? Yeah. In no other place is it okay to go behind a parent's back to get to a child. That's very predatory behavior. We had an experience in our house with our daughter being invited to play Dungeons and Dragons. A friend of hers invited her, but said, oh, this is being set up by my friend's mom. And we're like, oh, so you have a group of parents and children playing Dungeons and Dragons together, you know, what's that about? And my daughter got an email from this other parent inviting her. When my kids got email accounts, we let them know that until they're 18, their email accounts are open to their dad and me. So we can see whatever is happening in their email accounts, and they know that, and they agreed to it. And so my daughter got this email from this other parent inviting her to play D&D with this intergenerational group of kids. But the problematic part of that for me is I was completely circumvented.
They didn't invite you.
They didn't invite me. No, and I found that very predatory. And I talked with my daughter about it. And I said, you know, it kind of bothers me first that your friend gave this adult your email address without your permission. Yeah. And she said, yeah, I didn't tell her that was okay to do. And I said, secondly, that adult approached you and completely did not approach me, because for me, that's red flag behavior. Yeah. If an adult is trying to get to my child without me knowing it, that's predatory behavior.
Yeah, it really is. And it's so important to be on alert for that, because, you know, we're talking about finding trustworthy support for your child. And any adult who tries to undermine your parenting or circumvent you as a parent, it's really, as you said, it's a red flag. It's a sign that something's not quite right here. And it might just be that the parent doesn't really have an understanding of sort of these social nuances, but it's more likely in the world we live in right now that they might be actively trying to undermine your authority as a parent, and especially if you have a child who's struggling with gender identity issues.
Well, and even in the case that this parent maybe just doesn't understand, you know, the social nuances, doesn't understand, I don't necessarily want to put my child under the care and responsibility of somebody who doesn't understand basic respect for parental authority.
Yeah, and that is something that, you know, there's also, I've noticed there's a generation of parents, and I'm not sure sort of who they are, but this idea that they're going to be friends with the kids, and they're going to be very lenient, and they're going to create these fun experiences for the kids. And actually, I've had that with my own kids, where they've been involved in situations where I assume that there's a responsible adult watching over things, and there isn't, and it just shocks me. And so again, you have to be vigilant, really investigate things. And this doesn't, again, mean being a helicopter parent and not letting your child ever do things. It just means being, you know, investigating and making good choices about what kinds of environments are going to be healthy for your child.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do we have another question?
We have one more question. This is another tough one, as they all seem to be. I'm a single parent and I have to work full time. I cannot homeschool my child, but it doesn't seem like any other options, public, private, or religious school, are safe from gender ideology. Help.
Yeah, boy, that's a big one. And I actually know someone who works full time and homeschools her children. Mm-hmm. It can be done. A lot of times what it requires is to be creative and to develop a support system. And so there's a kind of an increasing movement towards, they call them pods, where maybe parents come together and pay someone to teach their kids in a homeschool situation. And that way they have more control over sort of the belief systems that are being pushed on their kids. There are other situations where there's kind of cooperatives, where children will go from house to house and spend time, and a parent will provide a certain, you know, one parent will teach one thing, another parent will teach another thing. There are options. It's really hard if you're a single mom homeschooling and working full time. So there might be other options, such as online education, where your child can be at home and learn online. This still, you're probably going to get curriculum that you may not agree with on some cases. There may still be some of this gender ideology being pushed, but you're able to monitor it more. Do you have any ideas, Maria?
Yeah, I loved what you said about some of the creative choices parents have been making. One thing that I have seen is groups of parents coming together in one of those pods. And if you've got 4 or 5 families doing that, each parent will take one day a week off of work. So they'll only have to take one day off. Of course, you'll need your employer to sign off on this for you. But then that parent has all the kids in the pod one day of homeschool. And then the next day, the kids go to the next pod. And so that can be done. The HSLDA, the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, has a lot of supports for parents. They have grants. They have great resources for helping you find curriculum, find resources. I know with what's happened in schools lately, with so many schools going to virtual learning, there have been a lot of teachers who have left teaching and have started their own businesses. Mm-hmm. They've started their own, I'm opening a homeschool consulting organization where I will come and homeschool your child. Or I know of one that's two former teachers who have created an entire curriculum that they will just give you. And if you say, well, I don't really like this part of it, they'll suggest, all right, well, let's pull out that module and put in something different, but they'll create the curriculum for you. Wow. So I think there are a lot of options. And there are ways to make it work.
Yeah, it might depend too on the age of your child, because if you have, you know, 6, 7 year olds, it's a really different kind of homeschooling environment than for 16 and 17 year olds. And so some of it might be being creative with, you know, if you have an extra room in your house, hiring someone in exchange for room and board. You know, there are options, but again, there are going to be situations where you cannot homeschool, and it's just not going to be an option. But I would encourage you to look around your neighbor, your area, and see what other kinds of environments there are. Are there charter schools? Maybe there are some independent schools that aren't affiliated with school districts at all. There, again, religious schools may or may not be places that you're comfortable with, but those might be options too. And another option might be moving somewhere where they do have those kinds of schools available. So again, sometimes this sounds like people kind of, their eyes get wide and they're like, move? And I'm like, yeah, sometimes that's what it takes. This is that big of a deal. Your child's health and well-being for the rest of your life is on the line. So sometimes, yeah, moving, sometimes homeschooling is really the best option.
Well, and I'm in, of course, some parenting and education groups online. And I have lately been seeing some comments from parents who are not faith-based at all. I saw a comment recently from someone who said, I am an atheist, but I am sending my kid to Catholic school because I know gender ideology isn't there.
Right.
I thought, wow, that's powerful.
Yeah. And that's where trying to gauge your comfort level, and some people might be comfortable with that, some might not, but to really try to explore other options, to find trustworthy people for your child to be around, because they're so impressionable. And this ideology, as you said, is so insidious that the more you can kind of cushion them with people who are safe, the better off they're gonna be.
Yeah, the more they're hearing the same thing from the people all around them,
yes,
the more likely they're going to be protected from this or pulled back from this.
Yeah, that's so important. Yeah. So what do we have for next week?
Well, for next week, we are actually going to go a little further into gender ideology, and we're talking about investigating gender ideology, that it's illogical, inconsistent, and unscientific.
Oh my goodness. I am so glad we're going to do that, because I keep hearing people say things like, you know, science shows that we need to validate people, or science shows that it's better for people to be their authentic selves, and really conflating these very non-scientific terms with science. And I think looking at the science is really important, because when you look at the science, it's crystal clear. There really is no question whether or not it's better for a child to feel comfortable with themselves or to go down this dangerous path.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you start digging into the supposed research that occasionally gets touted, it just falls apart. Either the research was very poorly done, or the results have been interpreted spuriously. There is not a lot of anything to put legs under this ideology.
No. And that's so important, because parents so often are told that science shows that this needs to be, that they need to affirm. And there is, you know, the affirmative approach is not scientifically based. There's no research. It's not evidence based. So it's important for people to realize that. Well, thank you, Maria.
Thank you. It was great to talk with you again today. We are not doctors or therapists. We are not giving medical or psychiatric advice, and we offer no guarantee of outcomes. We simply want to talk about how to support and love kids using long understood best practices from the fields of psychology, education, and child development. We're glad you joined in our conversation today, and we hope that you took away something you can put in your toolkit for parenting your gender-confused kids with truth and love.